On the Wintrust Business Lunch, some of you are already lining up for Terry Savage, 312-981-7200. I had a chuckle, Terry, when I saw your note to producer Pete about today's show. Markets or recession or not, I don't have the answer, but I'm going to warn people not to go into debt.
That's the whole thing. It's a giant tug of war right now, John. Famed economists, the bankers from the country's largest banks, all opining whether it's going to be a recession, not going to be a recession, a slow recession, a deep recession, a soft landing. Will it come in January, February? Will it come later on in the year? Your head could spin. And the question is, what will happen? The stock market is trying to figure it out. That's why it's bouncing around the zero line. We'll have the Fed next week. We've got a lot of signs that point to recession. The yield curve inversion, aha, short-term rates going up. Good for us. We'll talk about that. Consumer confidence is down. But we get some great economic news about jobs, about wages today, about productivity. The bad thing is when we get good economic news, we all know the Fed's going to say, oops, economy's too strong. We got to raise rates more, keep them higher longer so we can slow down inflation. And let me end with the bottom line is you. I don't want to cause a recession by telling everybody who believes in this to stop shopping, but I saw a statistic that really stands out above all, and that is the balances on credit cards in the last quarter took the highest percentage jump in 40 years. Everybody's saying, we got through the pandemic. Let's go out. Let's shop. Let's eat out. Let's go travel. And I'm telling you, they're paying for this all on credit cards. And if we get the slowdown, if we get the unemployment, it's going to be very painful. So don't go shopping. What if I'm wrong? What if the economy sails along? Then you'll still have your money. You won't have put it on your credit card, and you can go on vacation next summer. But if I'm right, you'll be clear.
You said don't go shopping. You meant don't go shopping and put it all on your credit card.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, Terry, I want to go back to inflation for a second, or recession. If we had a thermometer in the front of your yard, and when it got to the top, it was ding, now we hit recession. We're already at like 90% up on the thermometer anyway. So I wonder if the reporting about the looming recession isn't overreported, in that we're not going to go from zero to 100. It's going to be incrementally worse, maybe, but it's not like suddenly it's raining cats and dogs and frogs. It's not the apocalypse.
If your thermometer is measuring the amount of hot air discussed about recession, you're right. We have a massive amount of hot air. But the reality is, there's still a lot of jobs open, 10 million jobs unfilled. There's still economic growth. There's still lots of good news about wages up 5%, productivity up. So the point is, we aren't in a recession. And we've been waiting for it. We knew the Fed was going to tighten up. We knew the Fed was going to raise rates. We knew the Fed said, hey, maybe we'll cause a recession. We don't care. We got to fight inflation. But it hasn't happened yet. The question is it happening now? You saw layoffs not only at tech companies, but at PepsiCo in Chicago. I mean, you're starting to see it in the brokerage industry, the street.
But Terry, economy didn't grow for a quarter, if it receded for another quarter, how would that change the price of eggs at the grocery store? What would that do to my
theoretically,
salary?
Okay, just theoretically. The sucking of the liquidity out of the economy will cause business to slow, will cause layoffs, will take some of the upward pressure off prices. That's the Econ 101 of it. That's the only tool the Fed really has. And we could sit here and debate it, but let's answer questions. We don't know, but it's not one quarter, by the way, John. We need two negative. And we sort of had that last spring, but
wait a minute. Wait. You need two quarters of negative growth, right?
Right.
All right, but are we not coming off of one and we're waiting for the second?
No. We had a very good quarter. In fact, GDP was revised up last month. So our economy, despite all this hot air about recession, is steaming along. And ordinarily, we'd be a cheerleader for it.
I think we should keep that in mind. I think this idea about a recession, it's important. Look, there's two kinds of employment in the world, 0 and 100%. And if you lose a job or you can't afford your work, then that's enormous. But at a macroeconomic level, I think the talk about a recession is the shiny object that everybody latches onto and is overreported.
I agree. But in the meantime, just in case there is one down the road, everybody, please don't come into January, February, and March with huge credit card bills.
Fair enough. Absolutely. Okay, back to questions. 312-981-7200. Terry's ready for your questions. By the way, Terry, our friend Steve Alexander sent me a note. What do you suppose the most asked financial question was about on Google this year?
What's the return on the stock market?
That's a fair enough, but it's no. It is something you've actually touched on as much as anybody in America.
Oh, what's the rate on savings bonds? Has to be.
Yes.
T-bills
and I-bonds. It was kind of confusing because both suddenly looked very good. And every week people say, okay, what am I going to do now? Paul has a question about this on line one. Let's take this call first. Paul, you're on WGN Radio. How can we help you?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I was just wondering which would be better to get, I-bonds or the T-bills for my grandchildren?
Okay, for your grandchildren, you should buy them Series I-bonds. For this current 6 months, they yield 6.89%. These you're going to buy in your own name, in your own account, and put them in a gift box for your grandchildren. You can see everything you need to know about I-bonds at terrysavage.com. It'll give you all the links. If it was for yourself and you said, gee, I've got an extra $25,000, $30,000. It's been in my money market account earning 1.5%. Or I just had a CD mature and now they only want to give me 2.25%. 6 month treasury bills are yielding 4.7%. You buy them at the regular Monday auction. And I think they'll probably be about 4.7% next Monday as well. You get all that information. There's articles on facts on I-bonds and one on treasury bills. Treasury bills mature in 6 months. You can set it up so they automatically renew at whatever the rate is 6 months from now, which will reflect inflation. The Series I-bonds, you're going to hold for 5 years, and the rate will change every 6 months, and it's a great gift for children and grandchildren.
Okay. Thanks, John and Terry. I love listening to you guys.
Nice of you to call. You betcha. A lot of people do. I was in Peoria last night at the Riverfront Museum they have down there. It's beautiful. And Judge Mike McCuskey, former federal judge, and now the legislative inspector general in Illinois, he's a player. And he says, on Wednesdays, I got to hear Terry. So shout out to you, Mike. It was good to see him and
thank
a lot
you,
of
Judge.
Folks last night.
Okay.
So did you want to say anything else about
No, let's do
that?
The questions. I think this is really important. Your bank's not giving you enough. Everybody writes me, is it safe? I have to do this online. You do it at treasurydirect.gov. The links are on Terry Savage under that financial link section. Everything about T-bills. Just go and open your account. You just need your bank routing number and your checking account number. They're on your check. Your name and your address and your social security number. It's like buying a CD, only it's IOUs directly from the government. They'll take out the money minus the interest. You get the interest up front. So if you're putting in $10,000, they'll take out $9,892, whatever the interest is, for 6 months. And then you automatically have them renew when they mature at 6 months.
Hey, Terry Savage, actually, I've got a bunch of questions here for you. I wanted to get to this one. I have around $18,000 sitting around in my account doing nothing. And before you ask, yes, it's all chicken money. Okay. I don't want to lose it, though. Should I buy some treasury bills, all $18,000 in 1 6-month bill, or should I split it up and have different bills paying at different times?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, you're going to leave a couple $1,000s in your checking account or money market account just for an emergency. Got to bail your grandchild out from jail or something like that. But the money that you put away in chicken money, you might want to rotate. Once you open this Treasury Direct account, you could buy $5,000 or $10,000 worth of Treasury bills this week, wait 2 weeks, or you could buy the 13-week bills. They pay a little less, and then buy some 26-week bills so that you're sort of staggering the maturities. But this is like CDs. This is from the government, and there's no state income tax on the interest you earn. So this is safe. This is nobody's running around waving a flag saying, take your money out of the bank and do this. It's just as safe. It's IOUs of the government because they don't have a sales department at the Treasury. I'm their sales department. I'm telling you to do this. Chicken money, quintessential chicken money.
What's your thought about crypto right now?
I try not to think about it. I've said right along that I believe the blockchain technology is going to be significant and change our lives. I've been very careful about what I ever said about crypto, and I'm not going to start talking about it now. But did you notice gold was up $12? One of the things we learned is that gold has been a store of value for 2,000 years. It's coming back a little bit. Now it's up the high 1700s, and crypto is not a store of value, period.
Hey, Terry Savage, how do Zelle Venmo payments use for personal use to avoid the government sending a 1099-K?
Okay.
How do I label those payments?
Here's what's going on. And we talked about this in January, and I wrote a column about it in January. All of a sudden, Zelle and Venmo, I'm not so sure Zelle, but Venmo and PayPal, are sending 1099s for money that you transfer if it's in payment for goods or services. And so you have an option to say, I'm paying a friend. Now, you don't get some of the guarantees that you get if you're buying something online. There are some protections if it's a merchant transaction. But if you trust your dog walker and you want to pay that $50 and say it's to a friend, then they won't get a 1099 and it won't have to be reported as taxable income. I'll have to repost that column from January, as a matter of fact, and I will do that.
I think, and there's a lot of people that have their own side hustles like that, or it's
yes.
the way their business happens.
But a lot of us are stuff on eBay, for example.
And a lot of us are just transferring money, though, to and from family members, kids, stuff
Absolutely,
like
but
that.
But there's a way to designate on the transaction. This is a business transaction, a payment for goods or services. This is between friends. So look for that when you do that transfer.
One last question, Terry. Bill on line one, I don't have time to take the call, but I'll tell you what he said. Can I buy Treasury bills over the phone? Can I make a phone call and give
no.
my number to somebody?
No. You go online, treasurydirect.gov. It's a very simple website. They made it beautiful now. It says log in or create an account. I'm telling you, you can do this in 5 minutes. It's safe. It's secure. This is the government website that transfers trillions of dollars of treasuries, not to just individual buyers like us, but between banks and institutions. This you never wanted to pay your
yeah.
bills online. Now you're doing it. Now you're going to buy your treasury bills online.
And you're going to go to
treasurydirect.gov or go to terrysavage.com. You can post questions there. And under the financial links, you'll see two articles, one about I-bonds. One about treasury bills. Both have links to treasurydirect.gov because it's that same account that you use to buy I-bonds that you also can use to buy treasury bills.
TerrySavage.com on Wednesdays. Okay, all the time today, Terry. Well done.
Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's a business that's back in business. We like to tell these stories. Katie Cawson is the co-artistic director at the I.O. Theater. IOimprov.com is their website where you'll see the full slate of shows because they're back up and running in a gussied up location, too. Hey, Katie, this is John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. A longtime fan of WGN, so it's a thrill to be here.
Yeah, well, you got a lot of fans out there, too. I was reading your resume. My goodness, is there a theater in town you haven't worked in, or is there a comedy venue you haven't performed at?
Gosh, Zanies? I don't know. No, I'm not a stand-up comedian, so that's why I haven't done Zanies. But, yeah, I've been a part of the comedy community for a long time now. And so this is kind of the culmination of it all, being able to co-artistic direct with the amazing Adonis Holmes for a comedy theater here in Chicago, kind of put all of that experience to the test here now.
What happened to the venue? You guys shut down during the pandemic. Just kind of catch me up.
Yeah. So obviously, like, unfortunately, many theaters, it was closed down by the pandemic in spring of 2020. And then not long after it closed down, the previous owner, Sharna Halpern, decided to sell it. And so she sold it to some real estate developers here in Chicago that knew I.O. and wanted to honor I.O.'s history and standing in the comedy community in Chicago. So They decided to maintain the theater and hired Jennifer Eslin and Mick Napier from the Annoyance Theater to kind of help them reboot IO. And so they went about hiring a new management team, including myself, and that was back in April. And since then, the building got a glow up, and we've got a bunch of new shows, some returning shows that have been going on. We've been open about a month now, so we're getting our sea legs, and then we have a bunch of new shows coming up in the new year, including Improvised Shakespeare, which has been a long time hit here in Chicago, so we're excited to have them back. So yeah, we're up and running, and it's a much needed spot in the community. You know, a lot of the smaller comedy improv theaters, you know, couldn't survive the pandemic, and a lot of people lost a home to come and create new work and do improvisation and do comedy. So we're so happy to be back up and running and welcoming to that community to have a new home.
I suppose comedy clubs, Second City, Improv, the IO Theater, all of them are kind of like, they say the best place to put up a McDonald's is next to a Burger King, is next to a KFC. It's right. Good to have that kind of cooperative competition. And I'll bet that your industry thrives when more of them survive.
That's exactly right, John. It's funny because, you know, extended members of the comedy community out in L.A. and New York were kind of mystified that another comedy theater would help our theater get back up and running. But that's Chicago, right? It's like that's the community here. We all benefit from being open and providing space for people to develop their comedic voice.
So what are the shows like? I know you said you've got some returning favorites, but it's improv too. So isn't every show kind of different anyway?
It is, but you know, we're not, you know, while improv is our bread and butter, we also are having stand-up showcases. We have sketch. So there is a lot of improvised shows, as well as scripted shows and, you know, whatever the next new thing is going to be. We want to be able to house it all, you know, musical improv, World News Tonight, which was a more current affairs kind of based improv show, is back as well. We've got this great new musical, Sex in the Windy City, that just did a short run and is coming back for another run in the new year. And so, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of different comedic offerings here, as well as a full training center, which reopens next month. So that'll be up and running with five, you know, levels of training that you can go through, as well as other workshop offerings.
Can you do improv with a face mask or not?
You know, I think you cannot, honestly, because so much of acting and performing is not just what comes out of your mouth, but, you know, your facial expression. And so we're not performing with masks on.
Hooray.
And, you know, as you know, the COVID restrictions go back and forth and back and forth. You know, masks are optional here right now. God willing, the numbers don't spike again here in Chicago. But, you know, that's definitely a whole other hurdle because, you know, there are a lot of people immunocompromised and a lot of people that can't really enjoy coming out to, you know, group activities just yet.
Katie Cousins on the line, the co-artistic director of the IO Theater. IOImprov.com. Just what's showing now? If I did something for the holidays, what would I see?
Yeah, we've got Holidays from Hell. That runs on...
Oh, that's about my family. That's great. You're doing my family show.
You pretty much nailed the premise of it right there, John. It's kind of working off of people's hellish holiday experiences and improvising off of those horrible stories that we all have when we go home for
the
holidays.
What's an example in that? I mean, can you just walk me through a little bit about that? What's the setup or how does that go?
Well, the setup is they have different guests every week that come up, you know, stand-ups or just other people in the improv community that come up and they give a legitimate story of a particular holiday that was hellish for them. And they give specifics of that story, and then the ensemble uses that as inspiration for their improv.
What an interesting, very difficult to do thing, it sounds like to me. I mean, boy, you're on the spot. I guess that's the high wire act of improv, isn't it? It's exciting, but it's also dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is dangerous, but in the best possible way, because you're, as our head of our training center, Rachel Mason, says, we're putting art where there was none before. And it's only going to live in that moment of time that we're all experiencing it together in this moment. And then it disappears, you know, and then is fresh and new the next time that you see it.
How about that? Katie Costin.
But we're going to have a very special New Year's Eve show that features our new long-form ensembles and some other variety acts. So that's going to be a big, fun deal.
Okay. Well, let's send people to the IO Theater, ioimprov.com, ioimprov.com. Good luck, Katie. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Have another great run.
We hope to see you down here, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The CEO of United Airlines doesn't see a recession coming, at least for the airline industry. John Kirby says the word recession is not in his vocabulary because the Chicago-based airline has been setting records and doing well financially. Pressed on the issue, he says the Fed might induce a mild recession in other sectors next year. United reported third quarter revenue of $12.9 billion, 66% higher than the previous year. Kirby says business travel has hit a plateau, but consumer travel is up thanks to hybrid work schedules that give people flexibility to take long weekends. The Federal Trade Commission has asked for more information from Kroger and Albertsons about their $24.6 billion merger deal. Kroger says it received the request this week, focusing on its bid to acquire rival Albertsons. Kroger owns Mariano's in the Chicago area, and Albertsons owns Jewel Osco. Bloomberg reports requests like this usually lengthens the antitrust review by months or even years. Kroger and Albertsons are the two biggest supermarket chains in the U.S. There are concerns the merger will lead to higher costs for consumers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and we're about to find out how the war in Ukraine has helped American farmers. After I tell you, we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Live your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Well, I wasn't able to make an audio connection with our Ukrainian farmer friend Nick Gordachuk because of the power blackouts, but we did trade emails, and I'll talk about that in a minute. First, for farmers over here, this has been a record-setting year. The USDA says net income is the highest ever.
When you look at the sector as a whole, really good shape.
And the war in Ukraine is responsible for some of that record profit. Putin's attacks that began last winter made global ag markets go into a panic and became
an incredible source of volatility and anxiety.
And a source of higher prices farmers got for corn, wheat, soy, meat, and other commodities. Seth Meyer is chief economist for the USDA.
We've returned back to pre-war prices, which are still really elevated.
Also really elevated were prices for fuel and fertilizer for farmers. Russian attacks cut supplies and spiked demand. But
we have been somewhat fortunate to be a bit more distant to those impacts. For instance, we get some of our NP and portions of our potash from the Canadians. And so we've got supplies closer to home. We're perhaps in a better energy situation than the Europeans.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. In Ukraine, farmers not only had to struggle to pay for fuel and fertilizer, if they could find it, they were having to sell their crops at half or less of what they would normally get. Banks aren't as willing to lend. Many farmers aren't farming. In his email yesterday, Nick wrote, "The past few days have been very difficult again with over 80 rockets shot toward Kyiv. Russia wants to destroy our energy infrastructure so we freeze during the winter. But," he wrote, "on the farm, we managed to import a used generator from the Netherlands so we are able to work during blackouts. And that work that he and his employees are doing on the farm right now, processing and packing potatoes, is critical in helping feed fellow Ukrainians." I didn't have the heart to tell Nick how great American farmers are doing, but I think he'd probably be happy for them. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Rich Gentile is the founder of SantaForADay.org. Hey, Rich, this is John. What's Santa for a Day?
Hey, John. Santa for a Day is a 501c3 where we fulfill letters to Santa from disadvantaged kids in the city. And we partner with the Chicago Housing Authority. And, you know, there's so many great charities out there that do so much during the holiday season. And I think the one we're most familiar with is Where You. You know, you're in the store and you buy a game or a gift and you drop it off in the box on the way out. And it's terrific, but there's no magic. You know, there's no holiday magic there. And I think that's what separates us is that, or is unique to us, rather, in that we connect the donor with the recipient. In that, you know, you go to SantaForADay.org, you can read the letters from the child, and you get to fulfill their direct wishes. So it's what the child asked for, and then the donor is, you know, has that, you know, visceral connection to fulfilling a specific wish.
Well, so you're matching gifts to specific kids. Is there a letter involved, too? Does somebody take the gnome de plume of Santa and write in his name?
No, what we do is we put, you know, as I said, with the CHA, we hold letter writing events in the early fall. And so all the kids, there'll be about 2,500 last year and about the same this year. They write their letters. The CHA scans them onto our site, onto the back end of the site. And then donors can read the letters and then fulfill them.
I see.
Yeah.
And are those, I'm wondering, do kids handwrite letters or are these emails?
They're handwritten letters for the most part. Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, the young ones get help from their older siblings or one of our volunteers or a member from the CHA. But it could be just, you know, their cute little illustrations, what they ask for. A lot of them ask for just basic needs, you know, like a bed or a desk or something for their mom. So it's really heartwarming to read these letters.
Yeah, what an insight into maybe the lives of these kids and their wishes. Although maybe I would also be happy to discover they're just like kids anywhere. You know, they want an Xbox or they want an electronic toy. What do you see the kids asking for, Rich? Give me some of the things on the list and how much are people being asked to spend?
Yeah, the it's whatever you want to spend. Kids, as you said, kids are kids and they ask for a wide range of things. The important component of that letter writing for us is literacy and, you know, teaching kids the power of the pen, you know, and how to share their own stories and express themselves and then reward their efforts and in the process, you know, help them author a more positive, you know, outlook on life.
So when I see when a child is asking for a specific toy, then how do I get that in? Do I make a donation or do I physically purchase it? How do I execute that wish?
So you buy it on, you would purchase it on online. We're partners with Amazon.com. And then the gift is shipped to us from Amazon with a PO in there that says this is for Johnny. He wanted a red fire truck. And then at our home base, we wrap that up, we package it, and we sort it according to the different building sites for the CHA. And then we hold a gift-giving event. In Chicago, they probably host 10 to 12 of them every year at different parts of the city where the kids come with their families and have a nice community event, and Santa's there, and he gives out the gifts.
What a streamlined, smart idea. Rich Gentile is the founder of Santa for a Day. All right, it's all right there at SantaForADay.org, SantaForADay.org. Terrific idea. Good luck to you, Rich.
All right, thanks, John. And, John, the your viewers, your listeners, we've been overwhelmed. And if they get to the site, they're upgrading the servers. If it says, hey, the letters aren't available, just come back in, you know, a short time thereafter, and they'll be able to read the letters.
I'm sorry and glad to hear that at the same time. All right, Rich, be patient, everybody. SantaForADay.org.